Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We have a lot to go through, as always, but what we want to do today is wrap up on the marketing. That way, tomorrow, we will be able to dive into the Tory Act. And, as I've already explained, the importance of the Tory Acts, we want to help you understand the paradigm that the framers obviously understood. Those who could not embrace liberty were perceived as a threat to their... There's a good likelihood that they understood the hard wiring of people who believe that being subjugated to the state instead of living a life of liberty was, what's a good word for it? Two types of ideologies that just cannot live together or intermix. Nevertheless, they passed the Tory Act January 2nd, 1776. And so, we'll get into that. We're going to dive into the 14th Amendment. We're going to really do a full scope dive into the 14th Amendment. And then we're going to focus on Section 3. And we're going to get into the oath and the importance of the oath. As we dive into Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, we're actually going to be combing and giving you comments that come from the sitting congressman at the time as to what they were describing Section 3 to be. So with that, then we will actually finish that up, and somewhere after that, it'll be almost Thanksgiving time frame, we'll probably throw in a little bit of marketing in between, and then we will give you our constitutional Thanksgiving so that people can start getting back to the real roots of what the framers, because you've got to be clear, this is how the framers perceived the direction of this constitutional republic. And there has been many, many efforts ever since, agendas, what have you, that have driven us down this path that has led us into the arms of social justice. One of the things that I got to point out is this whole concept of social justice. And as a matter of fact, I talk about this in the aspects of the Communist Manifesto. The social justice is all about the redistribution of wealth in ways, or the redistribution of even outcomes and so forth, in ways that Engels and Marx couldn't even think of at the time. And so we will get into the concepts of the framers and how social justice or communism and or the state becoming the equalizer in determining things, how that is just, it flies in the face of liberty. Social justice, and as a matter of fact, I'll give you a good example, because it keeps on rearing its head. And when topics like this keep on rearing its head, what that means, friends, is it's growing legs. Social justice and the social justice warriors are out there constantly working, trying to elevate and trying to help bring life to these evil concepts. Now, one of the concepts that they want to invoke is reparations. And as a matter of fact, there's a group that is going after Harvard for the financial gain that Harvard has made in the past regarding slave labor. Now, whether slavery at that point in time, slavery in itself, as I've written very clearly, slavery was one of the very first sins committed per the Bible, because when man left, or when Adam and Eve were kicked out, or when man was kicked out of the Garden of Eden, one of the first things that they started doing was they started practicing slavery. And if you understand the whole concept of living by the sweat of one's brow, making somebody else sweat for you is is a contradiction and a violation of the concept that one is supposed to live off the sweat of his own brow. So anyway, when you start talking about slavery and how it has become this scourge upon the land, okay, I get that. I completely understand. And we have we've gone down this path of eradicating. You know, what I don't understand is why is it these social justice warriors aren't out there trying to stop slavery as it's starting to spread again, whether that be the sex trade or any form of slavery whatsoever. Why is it that they're not out there becoming the champions of stopping it? No, instead, these are like ambulance chasers running around with their hands out trying to say, hey, you know, you did an injustice. You owe us money. We're going to smirch your reputation. One of the things that the framers gave us was this paradigm. They understood the evils of people coming along and saying, hey, you did something bad that we now consider bad. It was okay then, but we now consider this bad. And so you have to pay. You've committed what we now call is a current crime, even though in the past it was not a crime. It was okay then. And so they actually put in the Constitution, it is a restriction upon the federal government as well as state and local governments from passing laws which are ex post facto laws. In other words, if something was legal at one point in time, you can't wave a wand and say, okay, now those are crimes that we can go and punish. People need to start understanding how tyranny comes when all of a sudden you create this erasure of separations of periods of, if you want to call them awareness, if you want to call them epiphanies of realizations of, you know, hey, this is just wrong. We need to move on from this. We need to stop this and move forward. Instead, you've got these ambulance chasers that want to go backwards and say, we need to get money for this. There's an opportunity for us. And that's what they are. They're opportunists. And I want you to see these folks, anybody that uses that word, reparations. Now, in context to true reparations as applied during the slave period, reparations were provided. They were immediate and they were provided instantly from those who all of a sudden were losing property, because at that point in time, the slaves were property and now they were no longer property. And so Britain actually paid reparations to those who lost slaves. That way, those people didn't have this grudge. Those people didn't have this baked-in ill feeling towards both the state as well as, you know, these people that were now freed, whatever they were, you know, whether they were Indians from India or what have you. And bottom line is, by Britain giving reparations to the slave owners, it allowed the slave owners to actually kind of just embrace this whole concept and say, okay, well, we're going to pay a fair wage because I got all this money to help cover that cost for the loss of human capital or labor capital that I had owned and purchased and invested in. Now I have this insurge because Britain understood one of the things that they were doing was they were taking away an investment that all of these people, corporations, businesses, or what have you had. And what they did was they gave them money so that they could quickly move from a slave state into a paid labor state. And so right, wrong, or different, regardless of how you feel about it, I do have to admit that the way Britain handled it at that point in time was no doubt the best process. ignoring those types of things actually would have created animosity between the two factions, the slave owners and the slaves themselves, because, you know, they were being held against their will, instead of looking at it and saying, we've drawn a line and we're ending this practice. And instead of, you know, having to force you to work for this person is going to have to now pay you. Do you want to work for this person anymore? If not, you become a free laborer in the market space, whatever, agriculture, leather working, whatever. And now you can go off and do your labor somewhere else for somebody else. We believe in free labor and a free labor market, so forth and so on. So just want you to understand, social justice warriors are the epitome of evil. When you look at the NFL, when you look at these people getting on their knees in protest to liberty and the processes that we have evolved from the Western and American Enlightenment, these people are poking you and I in the eye and saying, we don't care. What we want is to enslave. We want to move back towards slavery by the state instead of the individual. Because now the state has full control over everything, over what you do and how you do it, whether you even deserve to have that because of something arbitrary like your ethnicity, your gender, or what have you. Anyway, when we come back, we will dive forward into some of the marketing and some of the groveling. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. This show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
So we're seeing this trend that is contrary, that is the antithesis of liberty in our legal system, because now we have this thing called emotional crimes. In other words, there is this layer that they're starting to put onto, and they've been doing this for a while, and they call it hate crimes, right? It's an emotional crime on top of the crime you commit. And what they're trying to do And as far as I'm concerned, this is, I guess the best way to describe it, it is an evil wrapping and packaging of crimes themselves. I mean, when you strike somebody, regardless of whether it was a crime, whether you were in love or in hate at that point in time, does it matter? As near as I can tell, when you hit somebody, that's the crime, I believe, is battery, unless it's, murder or assault. Well, actually, assault is not necessarily hitting somebody, but you could be verbally assaulting someone without having to impact them. But my point is that why is it that there has been this huge push in our judicial system to try to add to a crime if the crime that is being committed and the punishment that comes with that crime is not steep enough, then why have to create a package for it? Let's just make the punishment fitting of the crime, regardless of how a person thinks. I have yet to see anybody that is truly in love with someone. Now, I do get it, the crime of passion when, a spouse walks in on the other spouse at the wrong time and they're, being unfaithful and so forth. But at that point in time, that person's love has been transformed into an outburst of hate and anger. Why is it that that isn't considered a hate crime? Well, the fact is, I don't know anybody that invokes any pain, misery, and or suffering upon a person in a loving way. I mean, I just don't understand that. What I believe is that when somebody makes the conscious decision to actually act out and commit a crime, it is a crime itself. We cannot look at these social justice warriors trying to add hate to, because then it elevates their agenda in trying to get you to change how you think about their particular situation. And a great example of this is the homosexual lobbyist and the homosexual agenda. Oh, well, because this person was homosexual and they were beaten and killed, well, then this is a hate crime. And as far as I'm concerned, the crime itself is battery, murder, or what have you, regardless of whether, I mean, adding the package of hate to the crime itself is almost the same as adding gender to it. Because you're a male that you should be punished even more severely than And this is how ridiculous things get. What we have to do is we have to look at the crime and go, okay, maybe the punishments aren't severe enough. If you look at our penal system, there are way too many people that are getting out too quickly. So with that, I would just ask that when you start hearing anybody throwing this hate crime, ask yourself, why is it that they're not out there trying to promote love crime, right? I mean, should we give somebody a better, because we kind of do, right? We have this concept of, that was because they loved that person so much and they just reacted. Well, maybe they, and as a matter of fact, I think if you look at Minority Report and how the cognitives identified a man walking in on his adulterous wife and how they arrested him and hauled him away even before he committed the crime, and how society had gotten to a point. We've already gotten to that point where we have marginalized adultery. We've marginalized the sexual sins to a point. And in the older days, those used to be, actually punished, sodomy and those types of things. And now we're supposed to punish those more severely because they feel you have done something wrong. Anyway, I have a problem with packaging crime itself. Crime is a crime, whether it be rape, whether it be murder, whether it be assault, battery, whatever the crime is. And if we're not giving the adequate punishment, then I think we need to fix that. And I will tell you that sometimes when it comes to the adequate punishment, we do not have an adequate punishment system. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. When somebody that has affluence, when somebody has money, and they only pay the same fee for their crime. Now, I'm not talking about traffic crime. I'm talking about actually, you know, like drunk driving, which is a traffic crime. But, you know, if you have an accident or so forth and driving drunk, speeding and something else, so the two kind of go together. It's one thing if you just drive home and you're drunk and you, nothing happens, and obviously you didn't get cited or anything. Sometimes you get caught in these, what do you call those? Sobriety checkpoints and so forth. I mean, you can get caught in those. But the point of fact is that when people do have their affluence and then they just pay off the cost of the crime, I honestly believe that the bail and the fines need to be appropriate. In other words, when a hardworking Joe or Jane is, you know, punished because they made a mistake and it cost them 5 years of salary to, you know, to cover that cost, and it's such an egregious cost to them, but it's nothing to that sports player. I truly believe we need to start looking at the value or the person's worth of what money they make and say, you know what, just because of your circumstances, we believe 1 year's salary is more than enough, you know, of a punishment to actually, you know, take or hurt you for doing and committing this crime. Well, that could be millions of dollars to that football player, and it could be $10,000, or actually in real cases, it could be $30,000, $40,000 to a landscaper or somebody working because they're just starting off. They're 20-some-odd years old, and do we really want to strap them with, you know, 5-6 years of income? My point is that the judgment or the system should be blind. And when I mean it should be blind, it should be equal. One person should not suffer more greatly than another person because of their financial status. And this is not about social justice. This is about making sure that the pain inflicted on the person, because I'm telling you, $20,000 is a drop of a hat if you're making $5 million a year. But if the pain is half a person's annual salary, well, then now we're both feeling the kind of same push and pain. And what happens? And so if you understand, people have, you know, disposable income and so forth, right? Well, I'm telling you, if you look at these athletes, if you look at people that make a lot of money, they're blowing through that money pretty quick. And so you take half their income, you've actually hurt them. And it's the same thing when you take half the income of a laborer or even an engineer, somebody that only makes $100,000 a year or $200,000. We need to start looking at revamping our judiciary system and our punishment, the penal system, in ensuring that justice really is blind, that we don't have flat fees, because flat fees do not adequately cover the pain necessary in getting people to behave better. Because the whole point in punishing crimes is to keep people from committing those crimes. How many professional sports entertainers or what have you would actually probably clean up their act if they realized that they could lose their whole year's salary if they committed that crime? Anywho, because I'm telling you, the working Joe, the working stiff, Jane, what have you, they should be a little more apprehensive, because we have a flat fee and it will hurt them. It will level them severely for the mistake that they made. And so anyway, let me just move into the groveling real quick. If you want to get Red State Coffee, you can get it from reclaimingtherepublic.org, and that's where you can get the link to GoFundMe. We need your help. Most importantly, regardless of what you believe you can do. If you believe you are a leader, if you look at yourself as somebody that can actually become a champion, send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. We want to help you. We want to help convince you to challenge those rhinos and those hacks that are your public servants currently. Okay? So info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, because we need people that understand the Constitution to start running races against the rhinos and what have you. Now, in our previous episode, I was kind of going after Elizabeth Warren, and I found some more information out, so I want to get that out there. So I'll kind of do a recap on what we were talking about, and then we'll move forward with some more G. Edward Griffin and the rest of the news, or what we call marketing, after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Now, there's no way I'm ever going to And even if we covered all of the news, all we're doing is wasting your time. The whole point is to try to keep on pushing and pushing and pushing the paradigm and helping motivate you, because that's what the pushing is for, is to help motivate you into understanding what the heck is going on, whether it be this social justice concept, right, with this reparations, or the social justice concept with regards to hate crimes. It's all being driven by the same thing, my friends. If you understand the real threats we are facing, it's all about seizing your liberties to where the state has the ultimate say. So, as I was saying, you know, and as a matter of fact, I didn't get a chance to, those of you who are not aware, because this is about the time you tune in every day, we have a dial-in number that you can listen. It's not to call for comment. It's not to call to talk. It is literally a listen line. So if you dial 605-562-4209, you will be able to just dial and listen to the content and get the good scoop that's worth the poop, right? Okay, so anyway, let me move on. As I was saying yesterday, as I was concluding in the episode or previous episode, I was stating how progressives, how candidates today, regardless of whether they're a rhino or Republican or Democrat or whatever their label they put next to their name, if they're up there making promises, what we have is political hacks that are willing to violate the laws of the land in doing things to get you to vote for them. In other words, they're there to work for you. I hear politicians quite often say, well, I work for my constituents. And what they do is they actually violate the Constitution in moving money that is unconstitutional into their district to create jobs or to do these things. They are spending us into oblivion at breakneck speed, and they don't have the constitutional authority to do anything about it. So to be very, very clear, what we're looking to do is we're looking to help educate you. So Elizabeth Warren is one of those hacks that's out there trying to buy votes, just like Bernie is. And as a matter of fact, one of the squads, I think it's Miss Presley, who is a congresswoman that's in the gang or the pack, who has broken away from Omar and Oso the communist and the rest of them, and has said, oh, I want to support Elizabeth Warren because she's buying, I believe, the votes that are really more important. Who knows for what reason why, but bottom line is, she's joining the bigger unconstitutional hack, or who she believes is the better hack, and that be Elizabeth Warren. But anyway, as Elizabeth Warren has moved down this path of trying to move Medicare for all and change the whole context of what Medicare was supposed to be, what has happened is she's basically said, we're going to literally eliminate private insurance. We're going to force everybody out there into the single-payer system that I, for 20 years, lived under. And I'm here to tell you, you do not want a single-payer system. You do not want the government to determine what you get, what you don't get, what you can have, and what you can't have. What you want is you want freedom and you want health freedom. That's one of the reasons probably why these groups on social media and so forth that are all about health freedom, they understand the importance of Republic Review when you start explaining it to them how Republic Review solves their problem, because they get it pretty quickly. Republic Review takes away all the unconstitutional usurpations that the federal government has made, such as Social Security and all these things. And actually, it puts it onto the states for the states to fix these things. And the states will be obligated, I believe the states are socially obligated, to fix these things so that people don't get hurt. And have a plan to move us into freedom, true freedom, away from what the federal government has done unto us. I also believe, in talking to Bob Schultz, that we're in a position and a situation where we have the ability to actually wipe away debts and all sorts of things. And people, they don't want you to know this. They don't want you to understand that actually legal precedents and contract law is all on our side. They have built, and you've heard me say this, they have built nothing but a house of cards. All we need is to get the states to stand up and dismantle it. The problem is that too many political hacks in the states look at, oh, but I want a little bit. I want to get to that trough of power. I want to be able to drink from that trough. I want to be able to stand up at the mantle of decisions and be able to, you know, they may not want to oppress, but they'll want to dictate and be the ones that have the power to unleash. Anyway, as I talked about this, there was a committee that identified that Warren would not be able to move forward in doing this, and that that Harvard professor, you know, basically talked more about the damage of, you know, people losing their medical insurance instead of talking about how this is an abject violation of the Constitution. So much for being a constitutional lawyer, or even being an academic lawyer from Cornell. This is what also has come up that I didn't get a chance to present yesterday. Warren herself admits that as many as 2 million jobs will disappear, including administrators, insurers, and other positions in doctor's offices. So as she wipes away this huge market sector and pushes it under the umbrella of government and public service, what's going to happen? The point that must be made is that if we are a representative or Republican form of government, then the president has no constitutional power or authority to even offer these types of promises. This goes hand in hand with somebody getting up in a theater and yelling fire, or somebody getting up on election day and buying whiskey for those people who vote for him. This is immoral, and this is illegal, and for some reason we have completely had this brain mush that has occurred to us to not recognize the fact that we have nothing but unethical moral turpitude, actually, in our political offices. Because these people are doing everything they can using your money to buy your vote. And that's what they're doing. Now, what I want to do also, because I know impeachment is just really weighing on a lot of people's minds. Out of the Constitution, there are a few things that need to be highlighted. First off, the House of Representatives shall, this is out of Article 1, Section 2. The House of Representatives shall have the sole power of impeachment. In other words, actually defining and indicting a president for trial. Now, what is that process of indictment? When you go in front of a grand jury, what is the process? Do you have an opportunity? And keep in mind, folks, that when they wrote this and granted this power of the sole power of impeachment to Congress, it didn't include the justices. As a matter of fact, the justices do not come in unless the impeachment is of the president, and that's when it reaches the Senate. And we'll get into that, Article 1, Section 3. In other words, Congress or the House of Representatives can literally have a circus running, and they can do a lot of things as long as they afford very specific constitutional things. Now, we do understand due process and defense and so forth. But when it comes to an indictment, and when it comes to, you know, defending yourself and all of that, that's during the trial, right? Now, when it comes to presenting facts and information, I think it is always better to have everything disclosed first, because it is, what's the best word for it? It is disingenuous to have a rigged court. Because what happens is when that trial actually goes to court and those, you know, the evidence is laid out and all of a sudden the defense lays out their case, it actually makes, you know, the prosecution or the House of Representatives look like buffoons. Congress does not want that. The Senate does not want that. That just makes the government look bad. And I'm willing to let them look bad. I know there's lots of people out there that are looking at the House of Representatives. We got to stop this. No, please give them all the rope necessary. The Constitution has defined this process very clearly, that they have the sole power of impeachment, of deciding and defining whether an indictment will move forward so that the President of the United States is tried. When we come back, we'll get into Section 3 of this, and then we'll get into some more news or marketing for you. So please stay tuned. We have more on the impeachment coming up, or at least the constitutional perspective, and we'll be right back. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so let me get down to the nitty-gritty. What does the word impeach mean? What does this impeachment mean? Again, it is only the process of making the accusations, right? It is the process of trying to bring formal charges out of those accusations so that a person can be tried. You know, it happens every time in your cities, counties, and states where people are impeached. In other words, accusations and charges formally come forward. In other words, an indictment that says we have a case to go after someone. That's what's going on here, folks. And that's what the Democrats are doing. They know they're in a position, and they have calculated that, you know, now is the time to either get, excuse the expression, piss or get off the pot. They understand that they probably will not have a good chance in obtaining or retaining the House in 2020, regardless of whether they impeach Trump or not. What they want to do is they want to inflict the damage upon him now. Because if they aren't going to be back in office, what they will do is they will put a schism in the United States, the people, in ideologically dividing. This is all about division. This is all about dividing and conquering, right? If you understand that concept, united we stand, divided we fall. If people started understanding that if we all unite on the Constitution and the liberties that it protects, then I think we start, you know, getting into more of a kumbaya moment. But Article 1, Section 3 of the Constitution clearly points out that the Senate shall have the sole power to try all of these accusations. they will try, and as a matter of fact, it goes on and says, when sitting for that purpose, they shall be on an oath or affirmation. When the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of two-thirds of the members present. So I'm telling you, keep your eyes watchful of the Republicans and the Rhino Republicans, because instead of them voting for, it's more powerful if they are absent in the voting process, because they've actually surrendered a vote to the Democrats. So if you're concerned about this whole impeachment process, let's get it to the Senate first, and then let's watch which senators are the ones that bow out. If we do not have 100 votes totaling, yay or nay, for the, you know, the conviction of the president, if it actually goes to that, then I'm here to tell you, friends, then you can actually start identifying whether Romney voted or not. Because if Romney votes against, then it would be a detriment to his career. But if he actually is not, if he doesn't vote and he's absent, then that actually takes away and helps bolster up the two-thirds or the one-third or that other portion of the Democrats who are trying to get their pound of flesh before the election. Now, I'm going to tell you that they're not going to get a two-thirds conviction. But what kind of damage will they try to inflict? And the point is that what this will do is this will create a much deeper division in the United States, because there are so many people. I know some pretty smart people that are progressives, and these progressives absolutely are diehards in believing that Trump needs to be impeached and removed, because they're convinced that he's committed crimes, because that's how it's portrayed by the deep state. When I say the deep state, I'm talking about government itself, the mainstream media, and all of these things, how this is all playing out in the public forum. Article 1, Section 3, judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. I am saying this, and I'm throwing this in here, because this is the exact same thing that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment does. In other words, you don't even have to accuse anybody and go through a trial. If you prove that a person has committed moral perjury, where they have violated their oath of office because they've done something, you can remove them from office, disqualify them for any future abilities of holding any office of honor or elected position. Just throwing that out there, because that was the paradigm in the Constitution, and it continued even into the what we call the Civil War, which was basically a century later. Article 2, Section 4, the President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of. Remember, it charged and convicted. So what's going on here is that the House is making the charges. It is the Senate that is responsible for the conviction process. Don't let this, you shouldn't be losing any sleep over this. As a matter of fact, if you're having the epiphany, you should realize that we want to give these lunatics, these progressive communists, all the rope they need, because I want to see them all hang. And as a matter of fact, when we finally start doing the investigation and finding out how many of these folks have violated their oath of office in trying to do these impeachments and so forth, then we can actually move quickly in removing them and banning them. Simple, right? Anyway, let me also throw this out, because I want to throw the biblical scripture from Deuteronomy, and it says this: if a false witness rises up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Lord or before the priest and or the judges, which shall be in those days. And the judges shall make diligent inquisition. And behold, if the witness be a false witness and hath testified falsely against his accuser, then shall, and I threw that in, it says brother, but anyway, then shall ye do unto him as that he had thought to have done to his accuser, his brother. So shall be put the evil away from among you. In other words, if somebody's accused somebody of doing some wrongdoing and they actually find out that, you know, that this person was not guilty of this, then the accuser must stand and face the punishment that they were pursuing. Wow. We need to restore that type of crap. Because I'm telling you, how many prosecutors, if they actually found out that they, you know, moved forward in trying to convict a person for murder or some other crime, and it was all false and trumped, you know, like some of these guys are getting out of jail, those prosecutors, based on this scripture, should be serving time. Not be, you know, slap on, oh, well, you know, that was all bad. It was wrong. I'm sorry. If we started looking to, you know, the scriptures to help us understand how we should be running our morals and how we should be, you know, fixing and healing our society to being a good, disciplined, enlightened society where we're disciplining ourselves, then we would be able to start purging and getting rid of the corruption amongst us. G. Edward Griffin throws out, and here's a good story for you. Eric Ciaramella, 33, was identified by Real Clear Investigations as the possible CIA officer who allegedly filed a secondhand whistleblower complaint against President Trump regarding a telephone conversation with the Ukrainian president. And so Samira has gotten cold feet about testifying after revelations emerged that he worked with Joe Biden when the former president was the point man for Ukraine under Obama. He also worked for the CIA director, John Brennan, and a DNC operative. So when they say that only the top-level people are the corrupt ones in the deep state, don't believe it. Alexandria Chalupa, who sought dirt on President Trump from the officials in Ukraine's former government. In summary, House Democrats are about to impeach the president over a secondhand whistleblower complaint by a partisan CIA officer, and neither he nor his sources will actually testify about it. And so here's the question, going back to that scripture, shouldn't we start implying these things so we can actually go after these folks? The House Democrats are likely to impeach Trump, and I believe we want that to happen, because when we actually can sift through the dust, we can actually go after a lot of these folks. One last thing, San Jose is passing regulations to blocking natural gas, and in California, there are 50 cities that are blocking natural gas from being able to be used by you. This is a part of the Agenda 21 globalist, you know, ecological EPA crap, and they're trying to create laws and they're trying to create this governance of technocrats who will literally control resources to hinder our productivity, which will ultimately kill us, literally, because we will not have the energy necessary to actually sustain the amount of people that we have, and the Georgia Guidestones will start resonating loudly. I'm going to get to the Georgia Guidestones as we start off tomorrow before we get into the Tory Acts. Anyway, God bless. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.